We're in the Congressional Corner with a very special guest, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Senator, let me ask you, you're on a book tour for the new memoir, Persist, which follows your campaign for president. How come you lost?
You know, I talk about that some in the book, but I'm sure that there are a lot of people who have a lot of different opinions about it. For me, I didn't write this book, though, to look backwards. I try to give an honest account of the questions I got asked and kind of some of the things that came out during the campaign. But the book is really about, in effect, the next 100 days in America. Think about where we are right now, Alan. You know, big change comes when we've had a lot of movement. The Great Depression, the financial crash of 2008. Now, in the last year, we've had a pandemic, a racial reckoning, an armed insurrection. Mm-hmm. We have elected a new president by more than 7 million votes, a record. By the way, the loser won't concede, also a record for America. And we just passed an historic rescue package. So think of America this way. Here we are, toes on the line to make some big structural change in this country. And so this book is a kind of extended conversation about how we do that. It's a lot of very personal stories to me, to people I love, about why change matters and the kind of changes that we should be fighting for.
What price do you pay for being a senator? I mean, it's quite prestigious and it's quite wonderful. But you know, I pay a price for running radio stations. I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what you do as a United States senator in terms of family and everything else. Is it a great burden?
You know, no. I should not call it a great burden ever. It is an honor to be able to get out and to fight for things you believe in. I've been fighting for a lot of these things, like universal child care or canceling student loan debt, for a decade before I ever got into politics. So I come to someplace like the United States Senate and I say, woohoo, you know, instead of maybe once a month I could talk to a group about those things, I can do it multiple times a day. In fact, it's one of the points I make about running for president. Here's how I saw it, Alan. I got to stand up every single day in front of groups and talk about the importance of childcare, that we've got to build infrastructure in America. For decades, we've invested in roads and bridges. Now we're talking about, finally, communications. Why? All those things. So people can go to work, so we can have a more productive economy. Well, damn it. If you really want people to be able to go to work and have a more productive economy and have equal opportunity to get out there and do that kind of work, we need to make an investment in child care for all our babies. And being a candidate for president, being in the United States Senate, man, I get to have those fights. In fact, literally just this morning, I was having a conversation with someone who might be in a position to make a difference on this, about the importance of making sure that we're getting child care into the basic infrastructure package.
I hear you. Joe Biden was seen as a moderate in the election, in the primaries. You were seen as a progressive. The progressives have now been, some of the progressives, including AOC, for example, have been saying Biden has exceeded their expectations in terms of his aggressiveness and sort of evening things up. What do you think?
You know, I see this just, I'm going to do a slightly different take on it. The primaries were not like the general election. Just put yourself back in that moment. You know, the primaries, we were all emphasizing differences, but frankly, all trying to row ultimately in the same direction. Once the primaries were over, think about how Joe Biden ran for president. He ran for president talking about Build Back Better, big infrastructure. He ran for president talking about child care. He ran for president talking about the role of government, making a promise that he would get vaccinations to people, that he would, in effect, use government to help save lives. He ran for president saying he was going to tax the wealthy in order to pay for the investments we need to make in America. Shoot, he ran for president saying he was going to cancel student loan debt. Not as much as I want to cancel, but that's where he ran. I say that, Alan, by way of saying Joe Biden ran on the most progressive agenda in decades, and he won by more than 7 million votes against an incumbent president. That is pretty remarkable. And now he's turning around and delivering on those promises. Indeed, I'll just tell you, from here inside the Senate, the phrase I hear most often from the other senators on the Democratic side is, we made promises, we need to honor those promises. And so for me, Joe Biden, he's meeting the moment.
You're on the Armed Services Committee. Is the Biden plan to leave Afghanistan the right move? What do you think, especially in the light of the latest Taliban violence there?
Yes. I have asked our military command in Afghanistan, both in hearings here in Washington when they show up, but also when I've been there on the ground in Afghanistan, been there with John McCain. So what is the plan? What does winning look like? And nobody could ever answer that question. And year by year, just the most recent, if you go back and look at the most recent Senate Armed Services Committee hearing, I was asking our military leader in Afghanistan, so where are we? Does the Taliban control more land now than it did 10 years ago? Answer, yes. Are we still having a problem with corruption in the Afghan government? Answer, yes. Are the Pakistanis still opening up in order to protect the terrorists? Just on and on and on. We can't stay in foreign countries as an occupying force. It was time long ago for us to get out of Afghanistan, and I strongly support the president in doing it.
Is there any downside to this that you can think of? I mean, we know what happened the last time, and women were subjected to terrible injustices. What do you think about that?
You know, look, of course I'm concerned, but we can't make the kind of change that alters the role of women at the point of a gun. That's not the way to get it done. We still have work to do in places like Afghanistan, and Afghanistan's not the only one. But it's work that we do through the State Department. It's work that we do through the United Nations. It's work that we do with our allies, not work that we do as an occupying military force.
Let me ask you a question. I know it's personal, and you'll probably say, I don't want to answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Andrew Cuomo was given $4 million for his book. Did you get $4 million for your book, Persist?
No. No.
I thought that might be the answer. $4 million. That was a lot of money. How is Kamala Harris doing as VP?
You know, I just talked to her yesterday, and she is in the middle of a lot of really good, important issues. We talked about Central America and how to help stabilize the government and the economy down there so that people don't feel that they have to flee gang violence or feel like there is no future for their children. We talk about, I want to make sure I'm keeping this at a very general level because I don't like to talk about personal conversations.
Sure.
Let me just say in a general sense, We talk a lot about things like child care and student loan debt and a lot of issues that are really important. You know, I knew Kamala long before she came to the United States Senate. She and I worked together back when she was Attorney General in California, and she and I were trying to find ways to hold the banks accountable when they had tricked and trapped and cheated people all across this country. And then Kamala encouraged me and helped me when I ran for Senate in Massachusetts, and I encouraged Kamala and tried to help her when she ran for Senate in California. So we have a longstanding relationship, and I give her a lot of credit for the work she's doing.
I'll tell you, Elizabeth Warren, what really makes me crazy, and that more crazy, I should say, and that is that Republicans are clearly energized about their chances to retake the House, maybe the Senate, in 2022. That would be awful from my perspective. What should the Democrats do in order to hold on?
Well, you know, I'll just make two points. One, you know what the Democrats should do? We should honor our promises. We made a lot of promises in 2018, a lot more promises in 2020, and promises in 2021 in Georgia to make this government work for the people. We've started that with all of the vaccines. Remember, Joe Biden said 100 million doses in the first 100 days, and by golly, more than doubled that. So making government work again. But now it's time, like we were talking about earlier, and like I talk about in the book, Persist. Now it's time to deliver on things like child care and student loan debt. And, you know, my view on this, a wealth tax. But that's part of it. The other part is look at how the Republicans plan to win. They plan to win by keeping American citizens from voting.
Yep.
At least American citizens that might be inclined to vote Democrat, right? So currently, 26 states have already introduced and passed in one house of the legislature or the other a bill to try to cut back on the number of people who are American citizens who actually make it to the polls and cast a ballot. I think that just that effort, regardless of how successful they are, that fundamentally undermines our democracy. This is an attack on America. It is an attack on everything that our founders set up. And this is something that to have a major political party in the United States say the only way we can win is by keeping people from voting both tells you how bankrupt morally and intellectually that party is, but also tells you that what these folks are doing is a genuine threat to our democracy, and it's important that we fight back.
Senator Elizabeth Warren, how do we fight back? This is a horrible thing that is happening.
Oh, it's terrible.
Are the Democrats playing by the Marcus de Queensberry rules while the other guys aren't?
You know, I worry about this. I worry about this, Alan. But here's how, you asked how we fight back. S1, okay, we already have the bill ready to go in the Senate. In fact, this afternoon, there are actually going to be hearings in the committee, in the Rules Committee on this. And the Republicans have lined up a bazillion amendments to try to weaken the bill. But we are moving it forward. This is a case of raise your voice, raise your voices, because it is truly democracy at stake. And this is one of those times. It shouldn't be a Democrat versus Republican issue across the nation. I get that it is for the Republican elected officials who are so damned out of step with voters across this country that they recognize that they can't win if it's a full and free election where every American citizen gets a chance to cast a ballot. But for people at home, people who aren't elected officials in Washington, whether you're Democrat, Republican, or independent, the strength of our democracy depends on consent of the governed. And that means that American citizens should have reliable access to the ballot.
You know, I voted for you. I'll vote for you again. And I just hope that you'll do the just fight the good fight, because these guys are not playing fair. And it seems to me that this is what we need to do. Senator Elizabeth Warren, we are so indebted to you for talking to us today. We really appreciate it. And we certainly hope that you'll come back again.
Oh, I'll come back again. And let me just say, I'm going to be tonight with Attorney General Maura Healey. We're going to do a conversation about the book Persist, and it's at Odyssey Books. Anybody can go to their website, odysseybks.com. Join us tonight. We'll have a longer conversation and a lot of fun.